Today on Off Mic, much of Northwest Indiana is slowly reopening from its COVID slumber. Restaurants in Porter County reopened this week. It's Lake County's turn on Monday. We bring you the latest on that. And with a little bit more than 2 weeks to go before the big primary for Congress, we'll hear what are the big issues for people with disabilities. And it's the last dance this weekend for The Last Dance. All this on Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, you know, it's we are heading into this Friday. It's May 15th, and what our first segment we're going to talk a little bit about today is Northwest Indiana. You know, right, parts of Northwest Indiana is already kind of slowly reopening from this COVID-19 slumber we've been in the last couple of weeks. Lake County, I believe Lake County government, however, is going to be opening in a week from Monday. But restaurants are starting to open here in Lake County starting on Monday. It's already happening in Porter County. But before we get into that, I do want to tell you a little bit about some of the latest numbers from the Indiana State Department of Health as it relates to COVID-19. We haven't done this in a while, so bear with me. So right now we are looking at 614 new positive cases of COVID-19. Total positive cases is 26,655. A lot of numbers here, so you can keep up here. 42 deaths for a total of 1,550 deaths statewide, and 5,236 new testing of folks for COVID-19. And to date so far, 165,448 people have been tested for COVID-19 in the state of Indiana. So that's a lot of numbers. And if we take a look at here in Northwest Indiana specifically, more than 2,700 people confirmed positive cases in Lake County for COVID-19. Porter County, 381. LaPorte County, 352. And as far as deaths, 136 in Lake County, 10 in Porter County, and 14 in LaPorte County. So those are the numbers, the latest numbers for COVID-19 in the state of Indiana. And I tell you that because state of Indiana, of course, is starting to reopen a little bit from COVID-19. Much of Northwest Indiana is already open. Now, they opened a little bit since Monday, including restaurants who welcomed some of their first diners. And I want to talk to you. I had a little bit of a conversation yesterday with one restaurant owner in Porter County. His name is Augie Feminella, and he's the owner of Abico out of Chesterton. It's a Italian cuisine. So let's hear a little bit what Augie had to say about opening up for the first time.
It's pretty good. I mean, we spread out the tables. We got a pretty big space, so we're able to get rid of some of our tables, spread everything out a little bit more, abide to the social distancing and all that. We're all wearing masks. Everybody seems to be enjoying themselves, the people that are out. We're all protective, though. Everybody's healthy.
How was it during the shutdown? Did you still have like drive-up service or carry-out service?
We did. We did. So we weren't even allowing people in. We would just take their, either do an online order, or we were doing deliveries through DoorDash and delivery.com and those types of things, or a curbside carry-out. And we would just take their information. And when they get here, they call us and we'd run it off to their cars.
Was there any apprehension about reopening this week?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Just because, you know, you want to play it safe. But at the same time, we got to try and check it out, see how things are. We might have to adjust, but we just wanted to open just to see how things were, and then we would go from there and adjust.
as a restaurant owner, I don't know how many menu items you have, but how are you able to carry all those ingredients and all the necessary things you need when you're not sure how many people are actually going to come in and order from your restaurant?
Right. Well, we cut the menu a little bit for that reason, and we're keeping inventory tight. So if somehow we ran out of something, and our vendors are pretty good about getting us the product, we just have to worry about the because we make our pastas and stuff in-house, so we got to make sure that that gets done in the morning and we have enough product for the day. But the kitchen has done very well with that.
And did you actually have customers on that very first day last Monday?
Yes.
Were they sort of waiting outside the door, or were you like?
It wasn't that crazy. It wasn't to where it was. Yeah, we had people trickling in, but it wasn't a madhouse.
And
which is good.
How has it been these last few days, including today?
Good. I mean, I think still people are still apprehensive about going out, which is still why we're doing the curbside. If somebody wants to call, if somebody wants us to bring the food out to their car, we'll still do it. We're still doing deliveries through DoorDash. We're doing build your own pizza kits for the kids to keep people occupied. We're doing the same thing with, we're making little pasta kits for them. So if they take them home, we give them directions, just give them something to do while they're at home throughout all this.
That's amazing. And, but like the staff, when they're there now, are the waitresses having to wear, the facial mask, or how does that all work?
Yeah, they're adjusting. They're not used to it right now, but everybody in the kitchen, everybody out front, they're all wearing masks. Me included.
So you're trying it out this week and hopefully for the best, but so far it seems it's going well.
Yeah. And like I said, it hasn't been crazy to where we're just like packed and we got people everywhere. And also that if we do wind up being on a wait, we're not going to have people wait inside. We're going to put them on a reservation system and we'll text them when their table's ready.
And that was my conversation with Augie Feminella, owner of Abilico of in Chesterton, Italian restaurant in Chesterton, talking about reopening this week. And this is Off Mic you're listening to on Lakeshore Public Radio, and I'm your host, Michael Puente. And joining me today in the co-host seat for today's casual conversation, as it would be, is Lakeshore's Vice President of Radio, Tom Maloney. Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, Mike? Good to be, 6 feet away from you, as always.
That's right. So, Tom, I mean, we've been covering this COVID-19 thing since the beginning, and people, they're antsy. They want to get back out there. I get that. Mm-hmm. Do you feel Northwest Indiana is ready to reopen?
Which part of Northwest Indiana? I mean, are we talking Lake County? Are we talking Porter County? Are we talking LaPorte, Stark, Pulaski? Newton,
I guess
Jasper.
It would depend really about where
really
you're at.
It really does. I mean, you look at Lake County, there's a lot of people that live there, right? We are a week behind the rest of the state, along with Marion County and Cass County, one other county as well to the south, and I don't remember which one it is specifically off the top of my head. I apologize for that. But
Newton, Stark, Jasper.
But yeah, the local counties here where there's less people, they could probably start opening up a little bit quicker and getting back to some sense of the new normal as it is. I'm really hoping that the new normal doesn't become the new normal term about normalcy. I'm personally looking forward to the day I can get over to Guaranteed Rate Field Stadium, Sox Park. And sit next to my buddies, have a couple of hot dogs, a couple of beers in the sunshine, and enjoy a ball game. And I know there's people that, want to get back to stadiums across the Chicagoland area. There's people that want to get back to seeing the symphony here in Northwest Indiana, being able to go to the movie theaters and catch up on the biggest blockbusters for the summer.
That's right.
There's a lot of things that are going to be different. So it says, are we ready? I don't know. It depends on what the definition of ready is, whose definition of it, is. because business owners are definitely ready. They are scrambling. Some of them are drowning because of financial issues tied directly to COVID and the shutdown of everything. Some employees, though, who might have compromised immune systems, might be vulnerable to the virus, are not ready. And that's it. It's a two-way street that I would not want to play Frogger across right now.
You know, when you're out there shopping in Northwest Indiana, Lake County, Crown Point area, what are people using the mask, or is it
not
like 50-50? Or
I mean,
they have it down the mouth.
It's
like
pull
a
it down
statement.
Over, you know, like over their chins. They are taking it off. They're not wearing gloves. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of you got to wear the face mask. Make sure you're wearing the face mask in public. Make sure you're wearing it if you're seeing older relatives. But it's pointless if you're not wearing it correctly. And right. Jose, engineer for the show, has done some really great interstitials that you've no doubt heard listening to the station. One of them involves not taking the mask off. And you know, you look at some people, and by the outside, you assume, well, you're probably healthy. I don't see anybody rolling around with oxygen tanks right now because they're all wanting to stay inside and kind of be safe. But, you know, people that have asthma or breathing problems, you know, if you've got to wear a mask, if you work at a grocery store, if you work at a home improvement store somewhere, that you're dealing with people on a daily and hourly basis as a checkout clerk, as a stocker, but you've got breathing problems – wearing that mask long-term can have some real significant issues, and wearing the mask long-term can cause problems for a lot of just regular healthy people. I'm a regular healthy guy. Since the pandemic shut everything down, closed my gym, I've actually been working out more now because I've got time at home, especially on the weekends and the evenings right. and stuff. I'm probably healthier now in the last month and a half than I've been in quite some time. Wearing a mask for an extended period of time, I got lightheaded, I was getting dizzy, almost fainted at one point, and this is me just trying to be safe and making sure I'm taking care of myself and taking care of those around us. I think we're kind of seeing firsthand the implications and the effects of this virus as a whole. You know, so if you are out there in public, don't take the mask off. Make sure you're wearing gloves. Don't handle or fondle or change the mask in any way. Just put it on. Make sure you're snug, secure. You're good to go. Get into the store and get out. And if you've got problems with the mask, take care of it once you leave, because otherwise it's really pointless to even be wearing the mask.
You know, it's funny that you say that. You know, there are a lot of people that are kind of used to wearing the mask. People working industrial setting, constructions, mm-hmm. they don't want to have that dust going in their lungs no matter right. what they're doing. I think, you know, there is an adjustment into wearing a mask. You know, I would say probably don't do anything too strenuous.
Right.
You
don't
know,
go
kinda,
for a run.
Kind of understand.
Go for a walk.
And if people don't realize what is causing that, well, we got with the CO2 coming out of our mouth, which mm-hmm. is good for the trees, but it's yeah. not good for us. So you're expelling that. That's not good for us. So there is an adjustment. There have been times I put my mask on too, and you're walking around the store and you're like, well, I'm feeling a little woozy. So you got to be cognizant of that.
And you bring up that CO2, Mike. Think about if you have a panic attack or you're having trouble breathing, they give you a brown paper bag. You breathe in and out of the brown paper bag, right? Mm-hmm. It calms you down. It relaxes you. If you're already calm and relaxed because you're not having a panic attack, you're going to end up having some issues in terms of getting blood flow and oxygen to your brain. So I see a lot of people as well when I'm driving around wearing masks while they're driving, which I don't necessarily think is the safest thing to do, because if you have those issues behind a 2,000, you know, behind the wheel of a 2,000-pound vehicle or bigger, as we love our big vehicles here in the region, mm-hmm. you know, that's a formula for disaster. If you pass out going through an intersection, you crash into a tree, crash into another car. And that's not going to say that everybody who's wearing a mask while driving is going to crash. But be aware and make sure that if you're feeling the effects of it,
I've done that. I think once you have it on, you forget you have it on. Then you get in your car, you put in your groceries, and you're like, holy, I'm driving with the mask on now.
Right, right.
And you just kind of forget about it. Maybe when you're used to it already, I don't know. I think if you're that used to having it on, maybe it won't affect you negatively, but who knows? I guess be cognizant of your surroundings. Take it off so There's no risk of folks falling asleep or passing out.
Yeah.
You know, at the top of the show, I went over some of the latest numbers for COVID-19, positive cases, and unfortunately new deaths and the new testing. You know, lately, I haven't been looking at those lately because I'm not sure how effective it is. I will moving forward to see how those infection rates are going to start to creep up now that everybody's out there now.
Yeah.
We do know, look, COVID-19 is pretty much here to stay. We're never going to get to zero COVID-19 positives, at least for a long while. It's no big deal anymore. It's like the flu. We're not there yet. We're not even close to that. So the state is trying to have increased testing. Mm-hmm. They're right up, you know, their goal was about 6,000 a day. Well, today they're at 5,200, a little bit more than 5,200. Last week, I know there was a day where they had surpassed 6,000.
Yeah.
So we want to see that. But I think the thing is, are local hospitals prepared to take in new patients once the confirmations start to go up?
And that's part of the argument initially. A lot of people are going to remember, especially via social media, flatten the curve. We need to flatten the curve. And the entire purpose of flattening the curve was to ensure that if you did get the coronavirus, rather if you contracted COVID-19, which turns into the coronavirus, I think, which one comes first? Things. Yeah, the chicken or the egg. But if you did contract it, that you could go to the hospital and be taken care of. And at the same time, if you maybe dropped a measuring cup and cut your hand like I did just a few months ago, had to go get stitches, and you can get into the hospital without issue. And that's really the purpose of it, is to make sure that the hospitals weren't overwhelmed. Flattening the curve was never about eliminating the virus. It was making sure that hospitals could handle an increased load of patients. It means that they have the available beds to treat people. And I think that's really, really important to keep in mind as we do open things up. Dr. Chris Box, that we'll hear from later this afternoon, 1:30, Governor Holcomb's going to be making his third weekly address to the state.
And you can hear that here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
That's right. Streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Dr. Chris Box, you know, has even said that the purpose of flattening the curve is to ensure that hospitals can handle an increased load. And it's really up to individuals to make that calculated risk for themselves. But one issue, Mike, if we can go back to what we were just talking about, were individuals who might be immunocompromised. What happens to those folks when their business opens up and they say, I can't go back to work. I have to stay home. I don't want to get sick. You know, it's now treated through the Indiana Workforce Development and the Department of the Indiana Workforce Department. Sorry, I can't
remember. Indiana Department of Workforce Development.
Thank you. Yeah,
they need a new name.
I know. IDOE.
It's like
or something.
Shield for Marvel. It's right. Strategic. Blah 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 blah.
So those individuals then lose access to health care. Right, you might lose your insurance if you're not going back to work. You're obviously losing your job, and you're now having to file for unemployment. But as if you're voluntarily quitting, as the state says you would be doing, I don't even know if you're getting the available resources from the state government or from the federal government. And that's a road that a lot of people have to navigate down. You know, and it becomes a matter of, well, what's fair? Is it fair that your boss can finally open up the business and get everybody back to work, but you still might not be able to go back to work? And especially if the boss wants everybody there, you know, maybe it's a matter of you're not able to work from home because of the nature of the job. Or if you can work from home, should the boss, as Governor Holcomb has recommended, that anybody who can continue to work from home works from home basically all the way through until June, until the states open back up by the 4th of July weekend. I think that's really, really important to be able to sort of navigate and negotiate around. It's really important right now for employees to have an open communication and dialogue with their employers, which means their direct supervisors, the chief of the company or the organization, the HR department, and knowing your rights as an employee when it comes to going back to work. Because if you don't know those rights, you could put yourself in harm's way, or you could be out of work, or literally just out of luck because of the dynamic situation as things are changing and adjusting. It's a really, really weird new normal, and a lot of people aren't quite prepared for that.
You know, a friend of mine just sent me a message. She manages a retail outlet store in Highland, Indiana, kind of a bigger box store, and this is their first time opening in like 2 months. There's already crowds waiting to get in to get these deals at one of these bigger box stores. Yeah. And she's worried. She's like, oh my God, some of them aren't wearing masks. Some aren't doing that social distancing. They got to limit the amount of people who's in the store. So, you know, we're getting a lot of people, though. We're getting a lot of those Illinoisans coming over to Northwest Indiana, which we normally want. And I think we still want right now. But, you know, I think people just need to exercise precautions. Everybody knows here at Lakeshore Public Radio on Fridays, Michael Puente brings in the donuts or something. We're not going to flatten that curve, that's for sure, with Michael Puente around. But I was at the place this morning getting the donuts, and even the cashier was like, yeah, you know, people are, you know, giving me dirty looks if I don't have the mask on. So I think it's that, you know, some people want to wear the mask. Some people feel they don't want to be forced to wear the mask. Mm-hmm. I just say try to wear it, you know, better safe than sorry. You know,
I will say this. When I am out in public at a grocery store, I'm wearing the mask. When I'm driving my car around Northwest Indiana, I'm not wearing the mask. When I'm mowing the lawn, I'm not wearing the mask. When I'm watching TV at home, not wearing the mask. When I'm at the office here, I'm also not wearing the mask. And again, the reason being, you know, some of these editing booths get really warm when that door's closed for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. Heck, I think I'm sweating right now just sitting in the studio. It's a little warm in here. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, as you're wearing a mask and the weather does get warmer, you know, you have to make sure you're taking care of yourself when you're not wearing the mask, making sure you're getting plenty of fluids in, making sure you're getting nice, deep oxygen into your lungs to help your brain, make sure you're able to function. Because if you're, making yourself susceptible in terms of trying to protect yourself from COVID with the mask, you're making yourself susceptible to something else as a result of a lack of oxygen. So again, it comes down to just really being smart. And like I said before, get into a grocery store, get out of a grocery store. Go buy the donuts and get out. You know, don't wander down the aisles. A lot of grocery stores in the area as well now are doing a really great thing, curbside pickup. One of the local grocers by us in Crown Point is doing it. Jewel Osco, we just got a pamphlet in the mail, get, you know, curbside pickup. And for a couple of extra dollars more, it's worth it. We've been doing a lot of grocery delivery to our house as well, whether it's Whole Foods or Imperfect Produce or Meijer, somebody. There's always somebody local that can go ahead and deliver. And, you know, but it's really tough for individuals who maybe don't have that extra expendable income to pay the $5 or $10 with the surcharge fees and the tips, et cetera, and a little bit more in terms of the food cost as well to do that. But if you can afford, it is a safe option to do.
And I do think a lot of these businesses that are doing that curbside pickup and home deliveries, I think even when we turn back to that normalcy, people are still going to want that service now. I think they opened a Pandora's box.
A little bit.
Kind of like that.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I can just click a couple of buttons on my phone, and then I don't have to go to the grocery store, right? I don't have to drive out to Merrillville, or I don't have to drive out to Schererville or to Valpo or up the road to Crown Point. I can just stay at home. I can hang out with my kid. I can get the lawn mowed. I can do a couple of other things around the house. I could just relax for a few minutes and maybe not have to potentially expose myself to anything. I will say this. I hope in the future, the very near distant future when it comes to life in the fall, you know, during our typical cold and flu season, I hope more people are taking safer precautions. You know, we grew up, we live in an environment where it's like, oh, I got a little bit of a head cold. I'm still going to go to the party. I have to go to work. I got the big meeting today, or it's my nephew's baptism. I gotta go. And people are really afraid to either cancel plans or reschedule plans because they're under the weather. It's always sort of seen as a faux pas socially if you show up someplace really sick. But if you say you can't go because you're sick, people always kind of roll their eyes and say, oh, are you really that sick? You can still come out. I hope people take all of this to heart when they're not feeling well, if they have to go someplace, that they are rescheduling those plans. And washing their hands all the time.
And with that, we'll be back with more Off Mic. And when we come back, we are going to be talking to a woman, local woman, who heads an agency that advocates for people with disabilities and how their issues are in a now in a survey to the congressional candidates running for our office here in Northwest Indiana. That's more on Off Mic.
The Indiana Department of Education is rejecting guidance from Education Secretary Betsy DeVos that calls for sharing emergency funds with private schools. I'm Matt Pelzer. Next time on All In, a deeper look at this story and other headlines from the past week, as well as a chat with independent music venue owners who formed an alliance to help each other through the pandemic. And a museum's online archive of 3D scans offers knowledge and perspective while we're stuck at home. Join us. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
During these trying times, we've been restricting the amount of guests we have in the Lakeshore studios. However, recently we've been lucky enough with the proper precautions to have Chef Nick back in the studio. Chef Nick got a chance to talk on the phone to touch base with a few fooderies and alcohol establishments and how they are dealing with COVID. This Friday at 3 o'clock, check out a special edition of Let's Eat with Chef Nick, right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, and I'm sitting here with Tom Maloney. You know, we're a little bit more than 2 weeks away from the June 2nd primary in Indiana, and one of the big races is the Democratic and Republican primaries for Congress. There are a number of folks on the ballot, and of course, taxes, the environment, are some of the big issues. But what are the big issues for people with disabilities? And joining us to talk about that is Teresa Torres, director at Everybody Counts, a not-for-profit agency based in Merrillville. Teresa, welcome to Off Mic.
Thank you, Mike. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. And one of the reasons we're having you on, because you sent out a survey recently asking each candidate who's running for that first congressional seat now held by the outgoing Republican, Democrat, Peter Viskolakis. I meant to say representative, not Republican. I have it right there, kind of shortened in my script over here. Democratic. Pete Viskolakis. We want to make sure we say that. But he's going to be exiting. He's been in there for more than 30 years. But a lot of people are gearing up for that big seat. So before we get into that, Teresa, what are some of the, like, say, two or three issues that people with disabilities are facing right now?
Okay. Well, there are many, which is exactly why Congress crafted the Americans with Disabilities Act so carefully to make sure that if it was implemented, those barriers would be eliminated. So, for example, it impacts it prohibits discrimination in employment, in housing, in basically in access to everything that everybody else can get to. So a lot of people automatically think about ramps. And certainly it's about physical access, yes, but it doesn't do much good to get in the front door if once you get through the door, you encounter outdated stereotypical perceptions and prejudices. So I would say, frankly, at the heart of all of the barriers that people with disabilities face, at the heart of that is attitude, which comes from ignorance, which results in a failure to recognize what equal access is, and then that leads to things like employment discrimination, inaccessible buildings, sidewalks, no sign language interpreters, pigeonholing people with intellectual disabilities, all those things that the ADA was intended to end.
Well, Teresa, let me ask you this. What are some of the unique challenges people with disabilities are facing during this pandemic?
Well, you know, marginalized people are always going to be even more marginalized during times of crisis, and that has certainly been the case with COVID-19. I think obviously there's, you know, issues with accessing services. Not everybody had the kind of backup system that we saw implemented in the northern part of the county. So folks didn't necessarily have the opportunity. Not everybody, as you just said, has the resources that get their groceries to pay to have their groceries delivered. And even if they could, a lot of seniors and a lot of people with disabilities live in communities where, frankly, some of these private providers are refusing to go. But I have to say that the most unique challenge, the most overriding issue, right, has been a lot of biases. You know, we're hearing some really painful things, thankfully from a small circle, but a powerful circle of people that are saying, well, you know, those people's lives aren't really worth that much. We just want to go, you know, get our coffee. You can see it on the number of, you see headlines every day about what's happening in nursing homes and congregate housing situations. Those have never been good environments, but, you know, with what's going on with COVID-19, those folks are even more at risk. And, of course, there's the risk factor that we know that has to do with age and pre-existing conditions. So the same issues that everyone else faces, but a whole lot more complex. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So, Teresa, what are some of the questions that were asked on that survey?
I'm going to pull it up so that I can answer your question without tripping over myself. We asked 10 questions. And so we asked them basically, what efforts have you personally undertaken? You know, what have you done? What have you been involved in to improve the quality of life for people with disabilities? We asked them what to evaluate how well Northwest Indiana was doing with respect to complying with each title of the ADA. And we asked them, kind of like you just did me, we asked them to identify what they thought were the top 5 issues of significance to people with disabilities and to tell us what they would do to address those concerns if they were elected to Congress. And I need to say that when we talk about people with disabilities, we're not just talking about, you know, a wide range of disabilities. We're talking about a significant number of seniors as well. So the work that, you know, that we do and the impact that the ADA has is for people with disabilities, which includes a great many seniors. So we ask those questions in the context of, you know, what do you think about this as it applies to people with disabilities and seniors throughout Northwest Indiana? So we asked them to give us, you know, kind of their take, and we gave them, I think, about 3 weeks to respond.
Was there anything that was surprising in any of those answers from any of the candidates?
Actually, yes, there was. We were rather surprised at what seemed to be, a few notable exceptions, there seemed to be a limited understanding of what the ADA even was about and how it impacts the local community, what the requirements are. I mean, you know, if you understand what the Americans with Disabilities Act was intended to achieve, you don't say things like, well, I'll make sure that they have their own bathrooms. You know, so, I mean, it was disconcerting, frankly, to discover that there was an even lower understanding, particularly with people that were that want to hold public office. So that was kind of disappointing.
Let me ask you this. Can you just, who were the, this, obviously there are a lot of candidates, and I even get mixed up on who actually is still running. I think there's, by last count, about 14 people running on the Democratic ticket.
Correct.
Let me ask you this. In terms of the Republican field, among the candidates, who responded?
Mr. William Powers was the only Republican who responded.
Wow. Right. So out of what, there's 4 or 6 Republicans?
Seven, I believe. One,
seven.
Three, four, 7 Republicans.
And only one, okay.
So, I shouldn't be asking a question that I don't know the answer to already, and forgive me, Mark Leva is still also running?
Yes, far as I know.
And he's been a long-time candidate, and we can't speculate as to why he didn't respond or not respond, but he's been on the ballot now probably 5 or 6 times the last time.
Yes, I recognize this
thing. So on the Democratic side, there's a lot more names there. Who responded to your survey?
Who responded or who did not respond?
No,
I didn't hear you clearly.
Who did respond?
Well, Frank Mervan, Mara Candelaria Reardon, Sabrina Hake, John Hall, Wendell Mosby, Carrie Castro, Scott Costello, Ryan Farrar, Jim Harper, and Andrew Silvestrowitz.
So there's some names missing.
Yes, there are.
Who did not respond?
Tom McDermott, Antonio Daggett, and Melissa Borum.
And before we're accused of being unfair or, you know, not reaching out, you know, a lot of times in my reporting as a reporter, they go, well, how aggressive were you in trying to get a comment? Because you always hear in stories, couldn't be reached for comment, and people hate that. How aggressive were you in trying to reach these candidates?
Well, we wanted to make very certain that we were as aggressive as possible, and in fact, we were. The first letter, hard copy letter, was sent to headquarters when we had headquarters, and the addresses of the other candidates when they didn't have headquarters. That letter was sent out in the middle of February. Within a week, we began sending emails, and after that, from those we did not hear from, we started leaving phone messages. So myself and Laurel Kilpatrick, who is the advocacy services coordinator, each sent numerous emails, left numerous messages, and sent, I believe, a total of two or three letters.
So this is important, and it's worth your time, and it's worth the candidate's time to answer this, because these are issues that do impact every community here in Northwest Indiana. This isn't just like a, you know, fill out this quiz or this, you know, listicle and find out which Frozen character you are. This is...
So we sure thought it was important. We put, you know, put a lot of energy into it, and we appreciate very much the candidates who not only completed the questionnaires, but then they participated in individual video interviews about their answers, and then those are posted on our website and on our Facebook account. So
what is the website and the Facebook page?
The website is everybodycounts.org, O-R-G. It's, of course, www.everybodycounts.org. And the Facebook page is under Everybody Counts Center for Independent Living. And what we have there are the candidates' answers to the questions that we posed. And we also have those interviews that we conducted, individual video interviews, in which they responded to questions that we formulated based on their answers to the survey.
I've known Teresa Torres now for a pretty long time. And Teresa, how long has Everybody Counts been around, and how long have you been the director?
I actually was the first director. We kind of started the whole deal in my living room back in 82, 83 is when we started talking about it. We were incorporated and first funded by the state and federal government in 1986. And so since then, of course, we began with Everybody Counts. And then about 20 years ago, we received federal funding to open a second center, and that's in Hammond, actually, and that's Everybody Counts North. So we have the two centers, and I've been involved since day one. As you said, it's a long time ago.
You know, we do know issues that people may not think is relatable to those with disabilities. But in my point of view, things like the environment, we do know that the EPA just declared Northwest Indiana or Lake County as being in attainment for air pollution. So they may be cutting back on emissions. And that's a concern for a lot of people, especially a lot of people who live in high minority areas, high pollution areas. So that affects people with disabilities. And I ask that because how important is it for you and for the disability community in Northwest Indiana to have good communications with the person who's going to hold that congressional seat?
It's absolutely essential to continue having a representative in Congress who, first of all, respects members of the disability community and the senior citizens that our agency serves and the people we work alongside with, someone who's willing to look at the big picture and learn about the issues that are important and who will not only work in their behalf, but with them, recognize them as equal members of society. Certainly that's a part of what we do. That's a part of our role is to work with those elected officials. We've been very fortunate to have a wonderful relationship with Pete Piskoski. He's been a staunch supporter of our agency, but most importantly, he's demonstrated respect and empathy for the people we serve and the issues that they brought to him. So his decision not to run for re-election was a real blow for a lot of people, I'm sure. But we also know that he will continue to do whatever he can, not just for our people, but all of us here in Northwest Indiana. But our relationship and the relationship of our constituents with the congressman is absolutely essential. Essential for our community.
But one thing I know about you, Teresa, is that you are not a politician,
and no,
you will get on the phone with people and kind of chew them out, if or at least have advocate as you are aggressively for your organization. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there have been times you've gotten on that phone or sent an email to Congressman Vassallo and say, "Hey, what are you doing? What's going on with this legislation or this funding?"
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, no doubt. And again, as you say, my role as an advocate, the role of everyone involved with our agency as an advocate, certainly is to fight for what's important. But at the same time, we have also strived, and I believe we have achieved, we have strived to develop positive, productive relationships with people in elected positions. And for the most part, we've done that. It hasn't always been easy. Sometimes you have to do battle about the difficult issues and then achieve not just a taunt, but a better understanding. And then you move to collaboration. And that's what our history has been. That's what our goal has been. And I think for the most part, we've been pretty darn successful in that. And we certainly want the same type of situation with whoever's elected to Congress.
Well, Everybody Counts is located in Merrillville and serves Central and South Lake County, as well as Porter County. And they also operate a second federally funded program, Everybody Counts North, which is located on Fayette Street in Hammond. We want to thank the director, Teresa Torres, for joining us here on Off Mic. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciated the opportunity. Everybody get out and vote.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more Off Mic and talk about The Last Dance for The Last Dance.
During these trying times, we've been restricting the amount of guests we have in the Lakeshore Studios. However, recently we've been lucky enough with the proper precautions to have Chef Nick back in the studio. Chef Nick got a chance to talk on the phone to touch base with a few fooderies and alcohol establishments and how they are dealing with COVID. This Friday at 3 o'clock, check out a special edition of Let's Eat with Chef Nick, right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
The Indiana Department of Education is rejecting guidance from Education Secretary Betsy DeVos that calls for sharing emergency funds with private schools. I'm Matt Pelzer. Next time on All In, a deeper look at this story and other headlines from the past week, as well as a chat with independent music venue owners who formed an alliance to help each other through the pandemic. And a museum's online archive of 3D scans offers knowledge and perspective while we're stuck at home. Join us. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. And joining us here, as always, is veteran sports journalist, Chicago sports goddess, Cheryl Ray Style. How you doing, Cheryl?
Oh, my gosh. What an intro. I'm okay. How about yourself?
Fantastic. You know, I should have mentioned this last week, but Cheryl, she does interviews all over the place, and she joined us. She joins us every week on Lakeshore Public Radio for Off Mic. But that morning, she was on with the BBC. So, you know, she makes time for us, and she makes time for the BBC, and of course, her full-time job with WBEZ in Chicago. So, Cheryl, we're hearing little bits and pieces of sports teams ready to start up, Major League Baseball, football. What's some of the latest?
Well, the most recent one is baseball, and right now the players are mulling over what was given to them by the owners, and that would be starting an 82 game season. That would be in July. They would have spring training in June. They would have to decide if they want to do it in their home stadiums or go to their spring training facilities. There would be a lot of testing being done, temperatures being taken, tests being done, and if a player comes up with the virus, they'll be quarantined and have to stay in quarantine until they have two negative tests. This would be without fans. So there's a lot of interesting developments with that, and I think that's the one that we will probably see sooner than later. Now, the NBA, as far as they're concerned, Adam Silver is going to wait a couple weeks he wants to make sure that he's very conservative about how they do it. And they would, if they do resume, it would be without, again, without fans, and more than likely be at a single location. So that's going on with them. The NHL, we don't know what they're doing. And as far as football, they're doing things over the internet. They're doing Zoom meetings. Right now, the Bears are, they had their rookie mini camp actually online. And as of today, they're going to be starting with the players, the veteran players, with OTAs again online.
Cheryl, what's the training process like? Because Major League Baseball, they were just starting to get going with spring training. Basketball, they're getting ready for the playoffs. The NHL, they're getting ready for the playoffs. How do you call these athletes back? Have they all been in game shape, so to speak, to be able to come back and start playing again?
Well, what I understand is that the teams have been in touch with these players every day. And anything they needed, they have been eliciting, getting them to know what they're doing physically. The hard part is, you know, you're going to know with baseball, is that the players have been ramped up. They were just days away from starting the season, so they got to be very careful when they do start with baseball. With all the sports, it's going to be a very difficult time just to get right back up to speed. So what I understand, like in baseball, they may have innings limitations for pitchers. There's a lot of things going on with that. With the other sports, it's going to be interesting because with the NBA and the NHL, they're gearing up for the playoffs. And you know how intense that is. And so it's a very difficult, you know, balancing act that they're trying to get to see how where the players are physically without seeing them. So they are constantly having contact with them with Zoom meetings and personal phone calls.
You know, I have one solution for, like, at least the NBA and the whole playoff scenario. Why don't they just do it NCAA style? One game, you're out. Just have a really protracted playoff series. No series. Just one game and you're out, leading up to a championship game.
I love it. It's going to be the Bulls and the Knicks in the East, and it's going to be like, you know, the – are there even bad teams in the West? I think the West is entirely loaded in the NBA. So are there any sort of like fun theories being thrown out there? Like I saw Major League Baseball was, it's just going to be the Central versus the Central and the East versus the East and the West versus the West. Is there anything a little bit different that you're hearing about that might be something different and kind of exciting for fans to be able to get into?
Well, there's going to be 14 teams in the postseason instead of 10. So you're going to have more teams, you know, vying for a playoff spot. But I do like the fact that they have the Central, you know, the East and the West, because it limits the travel. That you could really clamp down on the certain issues with that. They're going to be adding players to the roster. They could have, you know, several more players on their roster, so there's going to be more players. It's going to be a little confusing, I think. But when you were talking about the one-and-done games, that was floating about for the NBA doing that. That was a, you know, possibility. But
interesting.
Why would you reward teams that really should not be in playing the rest of the season? You know, like the Bulls do not deserve to be in a one-and-done at all.
I just meant maybe not the Bulls, but just the playoff caliber teams. Just
right.
If they're afraid to have too many games, too many people, maybe just, you know, just lessen the possibility people of getting sick, and at least to give fans something. I mean, we know this is you could just throw out the season for all the sports teams, but at least to give us something.
Well, you know, they are talking about if the NBA resumes that they would actually have 7-game series. They would not reduce them, which is kind of interesting because they could be playing, you know, to almost when the next season's supposed to start. So, here's what the other aspect I understood about if they resume anything, that the NBA would not be starting their season until Christmas next year for the next season anyway. And that's pretty much what they've wanted to do because they know that they have been competing with the NFL. Mm-hmm. And when they get their Christmas games going, that's when people turn on the NBA again. So this has been one of those interesting scenarios where the NBA would kind of like that to be what the end product would be. End this season, try to crown a champion, and then, of course, start the next season on Christmas.
Now, we do know that The much-anticipated Last Dance series is about to end. It's a 10-part series. The last two episodes air Sunday on ESPN. Let's take a quick look. And this the episode 9 deals with the Chicago Bulls and their battle against the Indiana Pacers. Let's take a listen.
It was a grueling series against a team Jordan calls one of the toughest he ever faced.
That series with Indiana was the hardest playoff series we had. They were big, they were strong, they were physical.
If I had to pick a team that gave us the toughest time in the East, you know, Indiana was probably the toughest outside of Detroit.
Well, Cheryl, obviously you cover the Bulls, and I'm sure there's been nothing in this 10-part series that you didn't hear before. But how has it been for you to sort of see the images again and kind of relive that with the fans?
Yeah, you know, it brings back a lot of my memories sitting, because we got to sit behind the Bulls benches during the playoffs, you know, so we got to see the blood, sweat, and the tears, I think what's great about the series is it shows how difficult it was to win and how demanding Michael Jordan was, but he was demanding on himself as well as everybody else. I would like to have seen a little more facts, because there's some things that are not quite accurate, and there's some people and there's some situations that was not you know, shown. I really thought that they should have, when they showed the Pippen not doing the 1.8 second walkout, they should have showed Hugh Hollins missing, you know, the call that they could have sent the Bulls to the Eastern Conference Finals. With that said, I think it's a great overview about one of the best teams and the best player in the NBA.
I will say this, Cheryl, as being a Southside Chicago kid who lived in Indianapolis during that time frame of the mid-90s, I'm really looking forward to kind of going down memory lane. And, of course, Reggie Miller pushing off, and Pacer fans that I've talked to recently saying Reggie doesn't cheat. And it's fun to be able to bring up these conversations.
The Davis boys.
Yes. the eye roll for me. What has been the reaction to The Last Dance in terms of filling the void of live sports?
I think it's been must-see TV in Chicago and some other cities, but I don't think it's across the board. I don't think it's a national. I thought it was going to be a bigger national thing. It's gotten great numbers, mm-hmm. but the numbers are pretty concentrated in certain areas. And it does fill that Sunday night void for some people. But it's not, you know, it's not every day. And what has done is it continues to spark the argument, the discussion, the thought about who's the GOAT. Is it Michael or is it LeBron? So it's been kind of fun in that way, where another generation of people finally get to see Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. where they never got to see him live or, you know, see what he was like.
We've got about 3 minutes left in the show. I do want to play a clip from something that hasn't been in The Last Dance but is very important to Northwest Indiana. So let's play that clip.
By now, everyone knows the story of Michael Jordan. But what's been lost in history is how and where his Chicago career began. Because you won't believe it.
We were very excited. I mean, to have Michael Jordan playing in your high school gym. He was coming off the Olympics.
That's right. On October 9th, 1984, Michael Jordan and the Bulls played a preseason game against the Milwaukee Bucks at a high school, East Chicago Washington High School, just across the Indiana border, 25 miles from downtown. It was Jordan's third preseason game, but the very first in the Chicagoland area.
East Chicago, Washington have a long history of great basketball tradition. One of the top high schools for basketball in the state of Indiana, which is known for basketball. But to have the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan High School gym, it's near the top as one of the biggest events that ever occurred in the city of East Chicago.
And that, of course, is me on a clip from Comcast Sports a few years ago talking about Michael Jordan's first Chicago area preseason game in Northwest Indiana. So that's a little bit of history. I'm not in The Last Dance, but they cut that part out. So, Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us here on Off Mic. It was a pleasure, as always. You can hear Cheryl's Ray Stouts reporting on WBEZ.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. And that's it for Off Mic for today. Want to thank my co-host, Tom Maloney, who is the vice president here. Always grumpy, but still El Wapo. Jose Rodriguez, El Hombre, and the fabulous D. Dotson. And of course, everybody here at Lakeshore Public Radio that makes this, who makes radio magic happen every day. So thank you, everybody. Stay safe. Wash those hands. Don't hoard and get out there. And we're all in this together. Have a nice weekend.